Hey folks, David Chen here. We're going to try something a little bit different today. As you all know, the Filmcast depends on patrons in order to survive. If you like the show, we really hope that you will consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/filmpodcast. You can sign up for ad-free episodes as well as exclusive After Darks. Those After Darks are a big reason why people support the podcast over there on Patreon. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to put the first half of this week's After Dark into the main feed. So you're about to hear the first half of this week's After Dark episode, which then in the actual After Dark episode is followed by a review of Thief featuring Blake Howard from One Heat Minute Productions. So that's what you are about to hear, the first half of this week's After Dark. We generally don't like to do anything like this. We generally like to release the whole episode or not at all, but I thought we'd give it a try, and if people enjoy this or it gets people to sign up, maybe we'll do it a little bit more often in the future. But anyway, here is the first half of this week's After Dark conversation, which again in the final After Dark is followed by our review of Thief. Enjoy! Hello everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Filmcast where we talk about a variety of random topics that did not make it into the show. I'm David Chen. I'm joined by Jeff Cannata and Devinder Hardwar. This episode brought to you courtesy of the fine folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Thank you!
Thanks, everyone, for your support. It's because of you that we can continue doing what we do. Now, we are going to talk about a few things on this After Dark. Rolling Stone has just published a very intense and damaging piece about the Release the Snyder Cut hashtag movement that we're going to discuss. Jeff and I have a couple of hopefully amusing anecdotes, and then we are going to dive into an in-depth review of the Michael Mann film Thief. Now, when we brought up this possibility, you know, it was Devinder that suggested it. I had never seen Thief, so I was excited to check it out.
And I saw that as an injustice that had to be solved.
It had to be rectified. It had to be rectified. Yes. And so we scheduled this After Dark to discuss Thief. And only one person came to mind to discuss it with us. And when that person wasn't available, I called our current guest. No, I'm just joking. The current guest is the person who I thought would be a perfect get for this After Dark episode. He is the producer and creator and co-host behind One Heat Minute Productions, a podcast that analyzed Michael Mann's film Heat minute by minute before moving on to other films. Blake Howard, welcome back to the Filmcast, man.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, boys. Great to be back. Always happy to be on the reserves bench for you legends. It's an absolute honor. Thank you.
I'm sure you felt a disturbance in the force, Blake. Yeah, once we had this idea, you knew what was going
to
happen.
My wife immediately, she's like, why aren't you listening to me again? And I'm like, I can smell a podcast invite coming again, sweetheart. I can smell something in the wind.
Well, I think beforehand, you were also talking, Blake, about how James Caan's passing hit you really hard, right?
Yeah, it really smashed me. My family has like a crazy weird connection in that my brother and sister and I share the same dad, but we don't share their moms. My brother and sister's mom passed away when they were babies. Unfortunately, she, you know, hashtag, speaking of hashtags that are really important, fuck cancer. And she named my brother Caan, and his spelling is K-A-R-N. She changed it, but it was because her favorite movie star in the world, their mom's favorite movie star in the world, was James Caan. So, her favorite movie in the world was Rollerball, not Thief, but that's like the lore of my family. So probably at an inappropriately young age, I started watching James Caan movies. So he's been in my life for such a long time. And apart from that, you know, I think you guys, I know you guys talk like this too, but you say like, who's one of your guys in the world? And James Caan is like truly one of my guys, you know, this one hurt because he's so special and there's like no one like him on the planet these days. There's no working James Caan today. And it was one that really hit. So thank you so much for, you know, offering me the space to talk about this fantastic film with you and about him. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I feel like the stakes for you being on the podcast are now extremely high because the last time you were on here, you discussed the Batman with us and you have the phrase Batman in your email address.
I know. And thanks to some of the listeners of your Patreon, they found me.
I bleeped it out of the main episode.
They did. They were absolute sweetie pies. And they were just like, thanks for being on the show. It was super fun to listen to you guys. So it was really great.
But yeah, between that and, a family member being named after one of the actors in the movie we're discussing, Next time, it's got to be a tattoo that you have, basically.
Yeah.
That's the next time we can invite you back to review something with us.
Definitely. Well, that narrows it down. We've got Apocalypse Now, No Country for Old Men. Like, take your pick, gentlemen.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Okay. Well, let's get to this story. So this actually broke right around the time that we recorded our normal episode of the podcast. And we are these days we're recording the After Dark separately. We used to do them all in one go, but this allows us to have a little extra time to respond to stories that happened since the main podcast recorded. Tatiana Siegel over at Rolling Stone published an article called "Exclusive: Fake Accounts Fueled the Snyder Cut Online Army." Subheading: A Warner Media report reveals that bots and other inauthentic users bolstered the fan-led campaign for director Zack Snyder's Justice League do-over. End quote. Now, there are a few allegations in this report, and actually, like, when you read the headline, it makes it seem like, oh, it's completely bots that were responsible for this. That is actually not the case, right?
Right.
There is a slightly higher level of bot activity for something like Release the Snyder Cut than there might have been for other grassroots activities. One of the quotes here is, at least 13% of the accounts that took part in the conversation about the Snyder Cut were deemed fake, well above the 3-5% that cyber experts say they typically see on any trending topic, end quote. So that is a lot more. That's more than double what you typically see for a normal thing. But it is not like 80%. There is still a lot of organic activity around hashtag release the Snyder Cut. What I think is interesting about this report is that it reveals a few truths. Number one, I don't think Zack Snyder comes off very well in this at all. Like, I think he comes off as understanding that he can take advantage of this often toxic fandom that is on his side. And
it's a very Lex Luthor plot, to be honest.
Yes, he is compared to Lex Luthor in the article, where I would not go so far as to say as he actively incited this crowd to do terrible things. Like, I think that's too far. But I think he was aware that that might happen if he did some things, if he took some actions, that he was aware that they might harass people, and he did nothing to
stop. Seems to be a trend in the culture right now.
Yeah.
Just inciting people and then stepping back as they lay siege to things. Huh.
I wouldn't say he incited them, but I think he knew that the stuff he did would cause people to, take it very seriously and go, you know, go into a tizzy around it. And
you know what's funny is that this entire plot is more nefarious than Lex Luthor's plot in Superman Returns.
certainly more coherent. Certainly more coherent.
And more original. He already did
original,
real estate.
Yeah.
He already did real estate, you know? Like, didn't he his whole plan was to resurrect something that was dead and bring it back in a new way that people weren't expecting?
I stand corrected.
Wow, Jeff, drawing all the parallels. But yeah, so here's kind of like a little bit of what's at stake here, right? In case people are curious, like, why are we even, why is this important at all? Here's a quote from the article, quote, "In mid-January 2021, 3 months before the Snyder Cut of Justice League was finally released, an Instagram account with the handle Daenerys I Lust posted a gruesome image depicting the decapitated heads of Geoff Johns, DC Films president Walter Hamada, and former Warner Brothers Pictures Group president chairman Toby Emmerich. The image rapidly circulated among the fandom, with Snyderverse devotees even tagging social media accounts of some of the children of the trio. It was alarming posts like these that prompted Warner Media, concerned about the safety of its employees, to take the unusual step of quietly commissioning a series of reports from a third-party cybersecurity firm to analyze the trolling," end quote. And Rolling Stone was able to get like copies or see a version of some of these reports. But basically, yeah, release the Snyder Cut online movement, which was partially fueled by bots, led to a ton of innocent people getting harassed, some of them off of the internet. And that is really upsetting, right?
I will say, like, maybe some of these bots were produced by fans. We don't know. It's not like Snyder is directly involved with manipulating and, you know, gathering those bots, but certainly it is worth noting that fans were doing this. We don't know.
Is that one that posted the decapitation thing confirmed as a bot? Because that feels like a human thing to do, not a bot.
I don't think a bot could have fabricated the head thing, but it's possible that bots like amplified the message. You know what I'm saying? But I think that I agree. It's like it's not clear the provenance of the bots. But To me, it does seem pretty clear to me that Snyder is not doing much to stop the bot, like this. He's not coming out extremely clearly and like defending the people who are being harassed.
He tweeted out, "Come down to the Capitol and be wild." Is what
right,
he said.
Right.
the movie version.
That's what I was
that,
alluding
perhaps.
To. Yeah.
Yeah, and this to me it makes me very disappointed in Snyder. I mean, at the end of the article, he says, "Quote." As an artist, it was fulfilling to be able to finally see my vision realized after such a difficult time in my life and for it to be so well received. I am grateful to both the fan community and Warner Brothers for allowing this to happen. To dwell on negativity and rumors serves no one.
Can we all just move on?
If this is indeed a balanced article, I hope that all the good work the fandom has done is being represented, end quote. So he was clearly like corresponding with Tatiana about this article, and he kind of understood that this would be an article that didn't make the Zack Snyder army look particularly pleasant. And so he's kind of trying to like hedge against that. But yeah, I'm kind of very disappointed that any of this has happened and that Zack Snyder and the studio has done nothing about any of this. Like they basically did nothing to stop any of this from happening.
I mean, right? We kind of talked about the Snyder cut as sort of like being a bad thing. It's a bad precedent for bad fandom, right? Like, because we saw the fans being abusive and kind of like just very not very great, like very toxic, and they were rewarded with, you know, the extra long cut they were crying for, and Snyder was rewarded with what, $100 million, like enough money to, you know, get the SFX done, you know, produce a full 4-hour cut. Bad lesson.
$70 million was around the budget, but go ahead, Blake.
The weirdest thing for me is around the whole toxicity of the fandom is I'm not sure if you guys remember, and I'm sure you probably do, but it wasn't released. The Snyder Cut would just appear everywhere. Like at that peak time, it wouldn't, whatever trending topic was trending, like the death of a, you know, we're about to discuss the death of a famous actor. Don't you remember that like sometimes you'd start reading the threads and people would be in there like, hey, release the Snyder Cut. And you're like, get out of here. This isn't your thread. Like you occupy the internet in such a mainstream way that like I always found that they would do weird things like that. And and it is really interesting to be like, I don't want my fans to focus on the toxicity, but it's like the toxicity got the thing made. So it is a really weird quandary that he finds himself in, whether you're responsible for them or whether you're just aware of the power that they wield. It just feels like, you know, you're kind of going, oh, it's a real disappointment that there's toxicity, but it's like no one gives you $100 million. It is almost like a hush payment. Like, can we make these people go away? And the article even quotes, you know, and to direct quote, like a 40% reduction in the use of the hashtag, like literally overnight.
And it's like the candy you give to the toddler during a tantrum. You know, it's not great. You're not teaching the kid anything. In fact, it's not great all around. One thing I want to mention, this article mentions the Ray Fisher, you know, stuff too, like the things he was trying to talk about, and that is also kind of disturbing to me. If and we don't know this, but if Snyder and Ray Fisher were like working to really just badmouth the early cut and just like to really spread the message of the Snyder Cut, I really hope that doesn't end up being like a weird collusion thing, because that really would stink.
What's interesting about this piece is there's basically like multiple intersecting scandals in this article, right? There's the release of Snyder Cut and potential use of bots to support it. There's also Joss Whedon was having a massive career meltdown around the time that the Snyder Cut came out, you know, like his stature in society had been greatly reduced as a result of not only Ray Fisher's allegations, but Gal Gadot and other people saying he was terrible to work with and he was just not a kind person. Not to mention Warner Media getting acquired by AT&T, the head of Warner's film division, Kevin Tsujihara, getting ensnared in a sex scandal. So you never really know like what is like when it comes to why is it that the Snyder Cut got made? Yes, it's partially because of the bots, partially because of grassroots activism, partially because AT&T wanted something to throw on the streaming service, partially because like there was a new regime in town and they wanted to put their imprint on the new HBO Max service. You know, like there's tons of different things at play. It's hard to get causality for a lot of these things.
And forgive me for not knowing this offhand, but my recollection is that it actually was pretty darn successful for them, right?
Sure.
The Snyder Cut?
It got subscribers, yeah.
Yeah, the Snyder Cut.
Hugely successful for them. Yeah, and it was almost a retcon of an original, incredibly awful critical response, universal bad critical response to the first version of Justice League, and then almost a pretty universal positive reception.
I put myself in that category as well. I think it's a much better movie.
I mean, we all like the movie. We all like the movie here on the podcast, which is a surprise. I will say I am a little bit more doubtful of you guys about it being a huge success. I'm looking up numbers right now, like according to Samba TV, which is one of the only ways we have viewership numbers on streaming services. 1.8 million HBO Max households tuned in for at least 5 minutes of Zack Snyder's Justice League over its premiere weekend. That figure ranks behind the 2.2 million U.S. households who watch Wonder Woman. So it's decent. It's not terrible, but I wouldn't say it's like a runaway success or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like a catastrophic failure, but was 1.8 million households worth $70 million? You know, like, I don't know.
I think we all stand united in denouncing the sort of mistreatment of people online and the rancor that this involved. But I think if you are able to set that aside, which is, you know, not easy, but if you're looking at, you know, from Snyder's perspective of sort of leveraging, even if he was responsible for leveraging bots or doing that, I kind of feel like this is a scandal without a victim, you know, other than the whipping the people into a frenzy and kind of insulting folks, which is nothing I would condone.
What about the people who like basically got death threats and stuff? Like, are those not victims? And I don't understand what you're saying about that.
Well, I'm trying to say that I don't think that. I think if the goal was, hey, I want to get this thing made and I'm going to use any means necessary to get it made. I don't think part of that was Zack Snyder saying, hey, I'm going to, you know, let's go with those death threats. Let's get that death threat thing going. I don't think that was bots. And I don't think that, I think that is just awful internet world that we live in. Mm-hmm. I find it difficult to lay that at the feet of Zack Snyder is what I'm saying. But
I think Zack Snyder could have come out. The reason I say like, I wish he had acted is because he could have come out and been unequivocal that kind of behavior is not okay. And I don't think either he didn't do that or he didn't do that enough, in my opinion.
But I don't think that this article or these revelations change that. I don't think they make that worse.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would agree.
I think what seems to be asserted here is like, hey, maybe this would never have been made but for some disproportionate number of bots, to which I say, well, in this case, do the ends justify the means? Because like, A, better movie, B, like success for Warner Brothers on some scale. Like where's the downside in this thing having been made? Other than, yes, a bunch of people got hate on the internet, but I don't know if that was like, if this article changes that, like it doesn't give us new information about that in particular. I don't think.
I would say that an article like this being written is an opportunity for the players involved to clarify, and Snyder was involved in providing statements to the article, you know.
Right. No, and I agree. He should have denounced that and said all that stuff is garbage.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Like he had the opportunity to do that multiple times along the way. He had the opportunity to do that in this article, and he did not really. Right. Yeah. He either didn't do it or certainly didn't do it effectively, as evidenced by the fact that tons of people got harassed.
Yeah.
Adam Wingard got harassed because Godzilla versus Kong.
He dared release a movie.
Yeah. So here's a quote from the article. Even after the film opened, random bystanders continued to be hit by the Snyderverse shrapnel. When fans review bombed Adam Wingard's Godzilla versus Kong, sources say the director asked Snyder through an intermediary to tell his fans to stand down and that Snyder refused. Snyder says he was never asked to have his fans stand down.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I said it's very Trumpian. It's you know, it's like just standing in the center of the maelstrom and going, whatever happens, happens.
Right? Snyder says he was never asked to have his fans stand down, adding, furthermore, I do not control my fans. They have their own will and their own opinions. You really give me too much credit, end quote. And I don't agree with that. You know, like I think the person who is the head of the movement has the ability to set the tone and to denounce behavior and so on. And he did not take that opportunity. And
I am 100% on the same page with that sentiment. 100%. And make no mistake about that. But I think I came into this conversation having read that article thinking the megaton of the article was in suggesting, hey, maybe this movie wouldn't have been made but for these bots. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was the big headline pull out of this thing. It's like, hey, bots made this happen, to which I go, so? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, bots may have contributed, but also, as I indicated, there's like a ton of other factors at play. This is a very time of great tumult for the Warner Media Company. So
it feels like, and I'm so sorry to do this, is like, there's two things. It feels like the recent Watergate series Gaslit, right? Where there's actually the story of the Snyder Cut as like the central theme or thesis. And then what's layered over beautifully by Tatiana Siegel is all this other chaos. Like that's where it starts to sort of obfuscate itself, because you're like, I don't actually know, like we don't know the causality of it, because it's like, you've got a sex scandal here and you've got Whedon imploding over here and you've got accusations of racism and you've got this. And it's just like, that's what's fascinating, is because when you look back at it, you know, to Jeff's point, it's like, if this story was just, hey, bots got a movie made, we could probably stand back a little bit more objectively on an island and be like, okay, well, if that's the story, wow, like look at the power that it can wield when you actually have some organic fandom that is like genuinely out there to be activists. And then you've got these bots that are helping to like push it over to the, you know, undeniable, we must respond to these people. But, you know, I completely agree with, I think everyone, I think we're all on the same page here, is, you know, one of the coolest things on the internet recently, and it came out of an awful, awful situation with another fandom that is absolutely toxic. Hey, Star Wars, was the, you know, the Moses Ingram racism that was being received as a result of the reception of Obi-Wan. And then Ewan McGregor himself getting on the internet and going, this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like
And the official Star Wars Twitter account coming out saying it's unacceptable.
I mean, that was like 5 years overdue for them, but it was actually good that, that, you know, someone who was a champion in that production going, no, this is not acceptable. We do not accept this right from the top. This is not happening. And so that's the direct contrast, I think, that we're talking about. And I feel where Jeff's coming from is like, there's a certain point where he absolutely could have been the champion and just like done one video, because I mean, you guys know, how many just one, I mean, it wasn't even Twitter. What was that weird like social media he was on for a while? Like it was
Vero.
Like,
he's still on it.
Yeah. So he'd be on Vero. Mm-hmm. That would get screenshotted, moved over to like, you know, reputable people on Twitter, and then story articles would get written about it because of, again, massive responses, and you know, whoever interacted with it will become a story in and of itself. So yeah, it's a real, this is fascinating. And I just want to champion again the work of Rolling Stone and Tatiana Siegel here, because it's like, they didn't just hone in, they actually went to the gaslight of it all, and went into all these other weird factors that muddy the waters with like, is this part of it? Like, you know,
and often like self-contradictory, or people contradicting each other's accounts.
Yes.
Which happens in the story multiple times. So it's very difficult to understand exactly what happened or why things happened in a certain way they did. Read the article for sure at Rolling Stone and check it out for yourself. Decide for yourself. But yeah, I think we're mostly on the same page, which is that like, and Blake, I also heavily agree with your point about the Star Wars thing came 5 years too late.
After
like Kelly Marie Tran was harassed off the internet.
Yeah, and Daisy Ridley and just, you know.
Yeah, it's just like, wow, you know, movie studios, I think, are completely unprepared for the weaponization of online troll armies. And this is yet another example of that.
And so, I won't mention her name because a woman on the internet has enough, right, trouble. But one of my best friends wrote a hilarious piece at the arrival of the Joker, right? This is pre-Snyder Cut, about how the Joker was bad at contouring. Okay, his makeup was bad. Mm-hmm. His hair dye practices were flimsy at best. You know, he needed to keep the dye in longer. We all know this is a joke. Yes, like funny. This is a complete joke, and it's funny. Do you know how many serious emails and responses that she got about how she didn't know what she was talking about? And I was like, people are insane. Like, you know, in this fandom, in particular in the DC fandom, sometimes they're just like, guys, it's a joke. It's not even a review. It's like a makeup tutorial review for a gigantic billion-dollar movie. Like, get over it. It's not hurting the movie. It's funny. And it's just, like, I think that sometimes with these fandoms, like, the swarm of, like, if your potential response is negative, there's, like, a swarm mob mentality that comes online. And so, yeah, that has nothing to do with the reception of the movie. Like, it has nothing to do with it. It's just like, if the perception is there that you're being negative, then it's attack.
Mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. I mean, for me, the big take, another takeaway from this, and it's another example, is that everybody at every level pays way too much attention to the discourse on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No disagreement there. And now we shall proceed with some more discourse on the internet. But anyway, let's change gears. Let's change gears. But that's the Rolling Stone story about Zack Snyder's online bot army. Jeff Cannata.
Yes, sir.
You and I both had an anecdote we wish to bring to the After Dark before we commenced our Thief review.
Please proceed. Mine's very brief.
You go first.
Okay, fine. If you follow me on Twitter or Instagram, I think you probably noticed that I posted a couple times this weekend that I, the family and I went on our first vacation ever, basically.
Nice.
COVID, because, you know, nobody goes anywhere for the last several years, and it's been hard. No vacations. And now that I live in Colorado, we have a beautiful, beautiful Colorado that is in driving distance. So we all hopped in the car and got an Airbnb in Vail, Colorado, which quite beautiful. It lives up to the hype, guys. It lives up to the hype. Vail is stunning. But I just wanted to, I thought it was, would be fun to recount for this audience that at one point we went walking to this park that is, I think it's the Gerald Ford Park. Very, very beautiful, very big, very well-maintained, nestled in the base of the mountain in Vail. It's just stunning. I mean, you talk about a park. This could be, you know, a painting. It is
the Nepu Ultra of parks. Yeah,
indeed. Thank you.
Like so many things in Colorado, like when you're up there in the mountains, everything is beautiful.
Stunning. Yeah. I mean, stunning. Anyway, I, in my infinite wisdom, decided to dress that day in my my Bluey dad shirt. I have Bandit from Bluey.
Oh, we are, I need one.
We are super fans.
Truly my favorite Australian TV show of time. Mm-hmm. It is the greatest piece of Australian art, and I think it's doing better than almost any kid show I've ever seen.
I didn't even put the connection together. I should thank you on behalf of your countrymen, like, for the gift that is Bluey.
Listen, Joe Brum, the creator, writer, engine behind the whole show, is amazing. There's actually a great for your fans on After Dark. If you're a parent, there's a great Bluey podcast that I've actually been a part of. Like, I joined on as a guest. I reached out to them myself, and I was like, I love this show like almost more than anything, and I have to watch it almost more than any film. So yeah, no, it's the greatest show, and you guys are about to get season 3, which is outstanding.
Yeah. So happy, yeah.
August 10th. Season 3 comes to America August 10th. Although some of my family have been seeing it with other means. But we're very excited about that. I do believe that Bluey is if not the best, among the best shows on television right now, or of all time. It is truly that good. Super fans here, and we are indebted to the people of Australia for making it possible. Anyway, so I have, we have the toys, we got merch, we got memorabilia, we're super fans of the Bluey. So I have Bandit, who is the dad, doing his sprinkler dance from the opening intro, and it says, "Dad, that's my shirt, it's blue." I put it on, I wore it. And I walked into this very large park that was chock full of people, and it was like I was a rock star walking into some sort of groupie meeting.
Are you the real Bluey dad?
No, it was just like everybody was so excited to tell me that they also love Bluey.
Mm-hmm.
It made me so happy that it has caught on to such a big degree that it has become mainstream. I couldn't believe it. Everybody was like, awesome shirt. People were like, August 10th. And I was like, yeah, yeah, season three, August 10th. Like, it was crazy. I was just walking through, like, kids were running up to me, like, oh, we love Bluey. Parents were like, oh, it's the best show, Bluey. I was like, yeah, yeah.
High fives all around. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. It was, you know, it was like Michael Jackson walking down the road, you know? It was incredible.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah,
you know, if we need philosophies to kind of lead humanity forward after everything falls apart, it's going to be Bluey. It's going to be Marcel the Shell. You know, like the good positive stuff. Yeah,
it was very heartening to see. I was like, oh, because you know, COVID, all these things, and you feel like you found this little show, and it's this little beautiful show that's just like too amazing for people to even like. You know, it's like it's so amazing that it feels like it can't be. It can't be beloved by everybody because it's too perfect for that. And yet it does seem to be catching on, and I see more toys in the stores and more. It just feels like it's going to be a juggernaut. I want it to last forever. It is truly, truly magical.
The real question, Jeff, how did your kids react when they saw this?
My shirt?
When they saw how people were reacting to you.
Oh, no, they couldn't care less. They were running around.
Yeah. That tracks. Deeply unimpressed. Deeply unimpressed.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell a quick story and then let's get to Thief. I often tweet about stuff that I like and recommend, and then I'll post the stuff that I like to my Insta stories. Instagram is kind of the platform where it's the most people I know in real life. You know what I mean? For me right now, as opposed to TikTok or Twitter or whatever. So I posted about The Bear, which is a series that's streaming on Hulu right now, just renewed for a second season. Very exciting.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, The Bear is a masterpiece. It's incredible. Go watch it, blah, 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 blah. Okay. One of my friends called me yesterday and we started talking. And she said, yeah, so we took your advice. We started watching The Bear. And we're like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like, wow, this is amazing. And so intense and like, woof, you know? And they got to the end of the first episode they were watching only to discover that they had accidentally put on the season finale.
Oh no!
Oh
no! That's
fine.
I thought you were going to say they accidentally put on Smokey and the Bear.
No. So the question is, like,
all
what
the
do they do? Do
with
they like,
Anthony rewatch Hopkins.
The, yeah. Do they rewatch the entire thing? I said, yes. You know, because they already know what the main developments
are. Fine.
Okay,
yes. It's like every show or movie that's like, how do I get in this situation? You got to go back to the beginning.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Record and scratch.
They've just turned it into a film noir. They've just turned it into a film noir. Awesome.
I turned it into a J.J. Abrams movie. Oh, where you start at the, or a J.J. Abrams TV show or movie where you start at the end.
I think if this had been, you know, Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or something. I think there are shows where I would say, well, you ruined it for yourself. Sorry. But I think The Bear is not one of those. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think The Bear is about the plot.
Well, yeah, you know, per our conversation on the last Filmcast, I will say The Bear is really good episodic storytelling, I think.
Right? Yeah.
Which is like every episode feels like, ooh, like that is a satisfying conclusion. Every episode kind of has a theme, right? And there's kind of a satisfying conclusion to each episode. So, yeah, you know, now that you guys are talking about it, I would say there's probably some value in going back and rewatching the rest of it. But
that's a brutal
thing. That is a bummer, though, man. Like, because there's some major stuff that happens in the final episode, you know?
I told you about the, I think I mentioned a while ago, years ago, maybe, the story of when we were late for our screening of The Crying Game went into the wrong theater in the multiplex and just saw the last 15 minutes of The Crying Game. And then the credits went, we were like, what?
I've gotten a lot of reports from people who watched Westworld season 4 debuted. And because HBO Max's app is so terrible, they literally accidentally put on Westworld season 1 episode 1 and were like, wow, they're really they're really going back and retconning the first episode here, which is something that Westworld might actually do. So anyway,
can I say one more thing about The Bear, because I was kicking myself for not bringing it up when we talked about The Bear twice or whatever many times. I think the Bear, bar none, has the best needle drops on TV.
Mm-hmm.
It, the soundtrack for the Bear is awesome. Awesome.
It's pretty good.
It's great.
I agree.
While you guys have not got access, unless through cheeky means online, to Bluey, I do not have access to the Bear yet. I literally got
Fair
a couple.
Trade.
Of, I
trade.
Got I got a couple of screeners. I'm so damned excited about the Bear. Everyone, like all of the people that I know that I respect their opinions are like, Blake, the Bear absolutely rips, including you three. I've seen you guys tweeting and Instagramming about it. I'm like, God damn it. I want to watch this fucking show so much.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Yeah.
It's good.
Anyway, RIP, my friend's experience of watching the Bear in order is all I want. So. All right, folks, let's get to our review of Michael Mann's Thief.
Clear. You've been putting down 2-3 scores a month. You want to put down contract scores all over the country?
If you want to listen to the full episode, be sure to sign up at patreon.com/filmpodcast, where you can get ad-free episodes as well as 3 to 4 exclusive After Darks per month. Thanks for listening. Bye.